a little planning for the future instead of just growing like Topsy. But that's my little prejudice. And I can't think of other reasons why I'm here. I'm an artist, you know. I'm not ecology trained the way so many people in the room are, so I'm feeling second class. Oh, my goodness. Let's go this way then. Jan, tell us who you're here and why you're here. Who you are and why you're here.
I'm Jan Allen, and I'm new. I applied for this 3 years ago and was really surprised to get a letter. But I'm happy to be here. I'm, like Pam, more here out of interest than background. I'm a web developer. I write code. I'm mostly retired. Master's in statistics, so kind of a technical background, but not an environmental background or anything like that. So, interest.
Welcome.
I'm Ryan Cannon. I'm new to the committee as well. I'm here out of interest. My day job is assistant director at the free clinics in town, so this is a way for me to do something that I have more of a passion for in my spare time, whether it's trail maintenance, river cleanups, what have you. So I see this as a way to help Henderson County continue to be beautiful and enjoyable for everyone. So happy to be here.
Welcome.
My name is Glenn Ingram. I'm here to keep an eye on John Mitchell.
Somebody needs to.
But all seriousness, I'm a retired human resources business partner out of the pharmaceutical industry, which in terms of this topic, this issue, probably has been one of the industries that have been on the cutting edge of environmentalism and proper handling of waste materials. And this is probably more of an interest that I have than an expertise, given my specific background. And I'm particularly concerned, frankly, about the balance between doing what we can as stewards of the planet and balancing that with the overreach of government and regulation and environmental initiatives that sometimes set to the side things like private property rights and the like that our country is founded on. And but as good stewards of the planet, we're expected to do what we can, not only for ourselves, but for our future generations.
I'm Kimberly Barrett. I'm a student at Blue Ridge in Environmental Science and Public Health. I'm new to the committee. I do it for interest and also to possibly learn more about the community and how I can help and branch out and network a little bit.
Welcome.
Thank you.
I'm Sheila Olvera. I'm also a student at Blue Ridge, an associate's in environmental sciences and technologies. I am also in this for interest, but also because I want to further study and help work with the environment and water conservation, decontamination, and the ecosystems that are involved in the water systems.
My name is David Allen. I've been on this committee for about a year or so. Probably like everyone else, interest, particularly in energy areas. I am retired, and that's about who I am.
Hi, my name is Kevin Wetzel. I'm the vice chairman of this committee, I guess now, and I'm a graduate of Blue Ridge with an associate degree in environmental science technology. I've been on the committee, I think, 2 years now.
Yeah.
Going on 2 years. I hold several state licenses for water quality and cleaning up water. I work for Continental, which is Tevis, which is up by the airport, and I'm their wastewater operator. I run their system. On the committee because I have two small children. I do believe we are all called to be good stewards of the environment. But like Glenn, I also have a concern of government overreach. And using it as a political tool, actually. So that's why I'm here.
Yeah, I'm with you guys to that extent and think that maybe I would like to see us here concentrating on water quality, air quality, the environmental things rather than the social justice things. That I think that that's what our studies in environment should be directed toward. But that's, again, another of my prejudices. So
I'm sorry, who's the lady here in the corner? I don't believe you.
Oh, I'm sorry, haven't you met Rachel?
Okay.
Well, others may not have.
Oh.
Yeah. I'm Rachel Hodge. I'm the Environmental Programs Coordinator for Henderson County. I work in the engineering department with the Solid Waste Department as well. I'm the staff resource for this committee. I'm here by interest, obviously, but I do have a background in environmental planning and environmental science, so it's interesting to hear all the different views and thoughts and backgrounds bringing you all here. So I look forward to working with the new folks and continuing on with our existing members. My office is over in the historic courthouse on Main Street, so if you ever need any information or resources, you should have my email. I've probably emailed you a lot at this point, sorry. But feel free to call or email me at any point if you need something. So thank you.
And we still don't have our
She'll
presenter.
She'll
Please come. I like to worry. I worry and get all the worrying out of ahead of time.
She was coming in from San Francisco
yeah,
yesterday.
Yeah, she'd been
so
out of town,
yeah.
So she's reverse jet lagged momentarily.
Mm-hmm.
A Seven Falls update?
Happy to speak about that.
Okay. Oh, first we ought to accept our minutes and introduce David Phillips.
No.
Oh, I've got an old agenda in front of me. Sorry, folks. Okay, we have to approve our agenda. Is it okay with everybody if we go according to this agenda?
Do we have a copy of the agenda?
I emailed it. I didn't run any extra. We can share.
We have been being good stewards of our trees, and
except then I ran copies of a lot of stuff.
Yeah.
It's running back though.
So make sure you recycle.
Yeah, recycle it.
Yes, I'm doing that now. I'm back to using plastic bags, and I'm saying, they say paper or plastic, and I say plastic, but I recycle them, you know, and I do. But okay, we got a little ahead of ourselves. So, does anybody want to read the minutes before they accept them? I've read them. I'll vote for accepting them. Anybody?
I'll second that.
Oh, thank you. Anybody again? There, passed by acclamation, I think they call that. And we've already welcomed our members. We've already done that. Environmental programs update. Rachel.
Do you
want
to
go and tell us?
I'm happy to talk about it or not talk about it.
I was reading the old.
Shall I start?
Sure. I mean, I have things I'm gonna go over, so why don't you
start? I'll just since it was on the old agenda,
I was
we've talked about it a number of times. What she's referring
to
is a failed development in the county, and I think we're probably all familiar with it. It's titled Seven Falls, out in kind of the Etowah area of the county. The update is that, as you may know, we called the bond on that project. It was about $3 million. We then approached the court to allow us to mitigate some of the environmental issues that had occurred out there. I would please this board to know that it was fairly, very extensive and, in a sense, been remedied. In fact, when Autumn and I were out there, has it been a year and a half ago now? There were gullies that had been formed that were deeper than I am tall. But the good news is we went through a competitive bid process after the courts granted us the right, and we spent, my remembrance, about $600,000 of the $3 million to have that mitigated by a company that had been out of New Orleans. They were great. If you go out there now, all the roads have been re-engineered, they've been reseeded, so there's no runoff to speak of, which is great news. It also opens the door, and this is where we are now currently, it opens the door for developers to purchase what is left of the property that's in foreclosure and maybe pick up the development rights and continue on if they would like to. It also opens the door that people might begin to sell their property there in the future. It also opens the door that the county might take the, use the rest of that money to do a little bit more of the infrastructure out there. So we've been approached by a number of different development groups with interest. None of them have, if you'll allow me to say, none of them have bitten yet. They may in the future. If they don't, or even if they do, we expect to be in court within the next 6 months in front of a judge to determine whether or not we can use that money to do some more of the infrastructure. And since I can't help but go on just a little bit farther, I'm looking at Autumn if I missed anything in that. That seemed about right. Okay. We have also gone through a process to be sure that we have done what we can from a county standpoint to be sure that something like this, where foreseeable, will not happen in the future. And we amended the code with final vote in April. Maybe it was May. It's been a couple months, but we did amend the code to provide, after speaking with a number of different engineers and groups, to determine a way forward that would allow our regulation to make sure this didn't happen again. That has passed, and we're hopeful that we're beyond things of this nature. That was probably more than you wanted, but that just shines a light on the danger of letting a county member of county personnel take the microphone.
That is risky.
I'm going to pass around my copy of the updated and make sure ask you to read yours and make sure everything's correct.
Let me make sure the copy you're about to pass around is the copy that I have.
It
too.
Says August 11th.
Okay. I'm going to just check and see. Yep.
Okay.
Yeah, and there's probably a couple little typo things on there, so just correct them. If you will, please. So we do have our committee full now, so that's great. We have one member absent today, but we are back up to 9 people, which is really good.
Francie's husband is in ICU, in case anybody cares to send her a card or some support.
So let me just take a few minutes. I won't be too long. I just want to give you some updates about some of the things that I've been working on for environmental programs. So we have, I think last time we were here was June, and so 5 times a year in the summer we have household hazardous waste collection. So I have one more coming up. It's Thursday, September 18th. I think it's in 2-ish weeks, from 9 to 12 at the Convenience Center. And we do have a fee change. Now liquid paint is $2 per gallon container rather than $1 per gallon container. I did find out an interesting fact about where that paint goes. The liquid paint, especially the latex paint, is actually put all back together into this kind of rubberized material, and it's used as daily cover for open landfills, which is a pretty cool application. So that's why it does cost us a little bit more to get rid of it, because it does actually get recycled. So HHW, 9 to 12, Thursday, September 18th, that'll be the last one of the year. And then we'll start back next year. The hours might be a little bit different, but we'll have them again next year.
Thursday?
September 18th, from 9 to 12 at the Convenience Center.
You can get some stuff to put in paint that solidifies it. Is that?
I usually suggest folks just use cat litter. It's the cheaper option.
Yeah.
But if you have any questions about items, if you go home and clean out your garage or basement and have questions, just give me a call. There's a huge list of stuff that we can accept. As you probably got some of my emails a couple weeks ago, we had Apple Festival this past weekend. I know some of you were there with other groups that you're involved with. But we did do recycling again for, I think this was the 4th year, and we introduced a pilot composting project this year. We did collect just over 3 tons of recycling, and we collected about 1.5 tons of compost, which is great for the first year. And it probably really comes down to about 1 ton once you get the actual trash out, the non-compostable items. But that went really well, and the compost is back at Danny's dumpster facility. They're the only permitted processing facility in the region for compost, for large-scale compost. So it'll be up there at Danny's and processed over the next 6 months, and then he sells the compost. to folks. So that was really successful, and I had 22 volunteers, and combined they gave about just over 73 hours over the weekend, so that was really great. I don't know yet if we're going to scale it back or expand it next year, but we're definitely going to needed all hands on deck for all 4 days, so I'll let you know when it comes up to that time next year. The roster is going around. Couple of programs. So I think I told you.
The Bee Lady.
I think I told you all last time that we met together that I lost my train of thought. That I was working on a mercury products recycling grant. I should hopefully know next week from the state if we are successful in obtaining the grant, and if so, we'll start this fall collecting all mercury-containing devices and mercury-containing lamps. Uh-huh. So that will be a huge, huge asset for the community. So if any of you, once I find out whether or not we get the grant and I start working on the implementation, if any of you are involved in some groups that would not mind if I came to speak about it and just start doing some outreach and education, just please let me know. I'm coming to Blue Ridge, I think in October. So just please keep that in the back of your minds, and I'll let you know as soon as I find out about the grant. We are going to be another program. Nope, it's right here. We are going to be starting an asphalt shingles recycling program. It'll probably be off the ground by the end of the month. So I'm going to give you all a brochure about it right now, but please don't share these yet because I'm waiting on getting the containers, and it's a big process. So the asphalt shingles that we can accept have to be clean loads, and it's all in the brochure. We'll accept them 5 days a week out at the transfer station for residential customers. So mostly it's going to be contractors and then roofing companies that come and do people's homes. I will be doing some presentations and outreach to the Hendersonville Home Builders Association in a couple of weeks about this program and just kind of keeping up with that sector of the economy. So once I get this finalized, just listen out. I'll be doing some press releases and things. But this is just for you to kind of have an idea. But it will be officially finished, and we'll put the word out in just a couple of weeks. So that'll be coming up. Let's see. I've got another program. This is an optional thing. If you're involved with any groups and you'd like to be part of the fall litter sweep that's hosted by the NCDOT and by Henderson County, you're welcome to. The information to be a part of it and register is on here, so I can pass this around and you can write down the website. But the commissioners did pass a resolution at their meeting on Tuesday proclaiming that September 20th through October 4th would be the litter sweep drive. So it's basically going to be roadside cleanups throughout the community. It'll last a couple of weeks, which is not to be confused with Big Sweep, which is a waterways cleanup, which is happening this Saturday, which is also lots of groups throughout the community. And we're also partnering with some of those groups for that.
Does litter sweep apply to privately owned roads, or it's just DOT and
it's mostly public state-owned roads and public roads, because DOT will pick up the waste out of the right-of-way. But since we do have a fee waiver at the transfer station for groups that participate with this program, so if, like, a neighborhood does something, you'd be able to bring it for no cost over the scales of the transfer station.
Okay.
So if you're interested in forming a group, and it's not going to be on a public road, just let me know so I can get up with the DOT district engineer.
Do you do it with orange garbage bags, or how do you do it?
I would think so. I haven't actually done this one before. I've always been involved with the river cleanup. So this is actually new for me as well. So I'm learning.
Do they take things like tires and things that have been dumped?
I would assume so. There's a lot of information.
I'm sorry.
No. No, if you know about it, you can give some more information.
They will... whoever's in over the collections of what is built up, it's usually in the orange bags, and they'll pick up the tires, the whatever else is there, as long as it's all together with whatever you're picking up.
If it's a refrigerator, maybe not.
No, probably not.
Okay. So yeah, just pass that around and write down the website. if you're interested. And, you know, the other thing is, too, the committee could be a group. And, you know, we could go out as a committee and clean up a section if you were interested in doing something like that. I think those are all the program updates I have. I'm constantly researching and working on just learning about new markets for taking different kinds of hard-to-recycle items. So if there's something that you notice maybe in your neighborhood that a lot of people have a lot of something and there's no way to get rid of it at our transfer station or our convenience center, let me know. And I'm always looking for stuff. Right now we're still looking at trying to get rid of rigid plastic, which is things like 5-gallon buckets, lawn furniture, because they don't pack down very well. So it's tricky, but we're working on stuff like that. And then item C under number 4, one of the things that I put into the plan, it's not really even a plan, it's a summary, that I gave you last month is a highlight of all of the programs and projects that the county has done in the last couple of years related to energy management and other resource management items. And so let me see if I can get to the page. There's a list in here. Anyway, one of the things that I thought would be really helpful, plan elements. Oh, I'm sorry, section 4, guiding policies and existing plans. It starts on page 9. One of the things that I thought would be helpful for you all, being on this committee, but also just being members of the community, would be to go and take tours of some of the facilities that we operate already that have to do with energy saving measures or what have you. So there's a couple different things we could do. We could, we don't have to have a formal meeting every quarter. We could use one of our meetings to go and take a tour. Or if the majority of folks would like to pick a different day in between meetings, we could go and take a tour. It's however we want to do. So I think we should wait and start those maybe in the spring because it's going to be cold in the winter to go and walk around at all these facilities outside.
I'm the other way around. I don't like the heat and the bugs.
Well, I guess in March, our first 2015 meeting is going to be in March. So it's hit or miss with the weather.
Halfway between.
And there's some stuff right here downtown where we could just meet at a location and all walk there together. The transfer station, we would need to carpool. The convenience center, we'd need to carpool. The CNG station is right down the street. So maybe we can, at our December meeting, maybe we can go ahead and try and pick a date and schedule our first tour for our March meeting if you want to skip the actual meeting. Unless we have other business, but
I would like to have a vote on whether you would like to have these as enrichment days or whether you'd like to take up meeting time. How many people are in favor of going on this kind of tour during a meeting? How many people would rather have it be a separate day?
What is the opinion of the three?
I'm kind of the shallow end of the pool, I guess. just in terms of, I think from one perspective, it would give us a better sense of what's going on in Henderson County and maybe allow us to better have a sense of how we can make it better or improve these systems that are already existing. So I'm kind of on the fence about that. I mean, I think it could be a good use of our time as a meeting or as enrichment time, so...
So those were abstentions over there.
Yeah, I mean, I'm on the fence. I could go either way. I mean, I agree with Ryan that there's a context here that I think would be helpful. So being on the ground and seeing, I mean, I go to the transfer station because I live in the county. Mm-hmm. So my own blind spot there is I think I know what's there. That's dangerous. Mm-hmm. So if we went there and kind of expanded, whether we do that this time or another time, that would be fine.
I went to a thing you guys held one time where they showed a film of a station that took the recycling and how they sorted it and what they did with it. And I found that very interesting because then you understand why you're supposed to take the tops off things.
And I do have a video under the environmental program section of the engineering website for the county where you can watch a video about the MRF, which is the materials recovery facility where our recyclables go. And I'm happy to send that link to you. It's a really cool video.
I think that it's a great idea. I just feel like this is my first meeting. I don't know how critical the meetings themselves are and whether a field trip or other enrichment should it take the place of a meeting or be in addition to a meeting?
There's a reason they have the possibility to abstain.
Well, if I might just offer that we just kind of let this meeting happen, and then at our December meeting we can kind of choose how we want to do. And it's not like, you know, the ones downtown, it's not like I couldn't meet half of you one day and half of you another day. When we do have to travel out, you know, towards Stony Mountain Road, I'd rather us be a group. But so we can make a decision later. It doesn't have to be today. But that is something I would like for us to do.
I was thinking the last meeting we had, and we tabled it, the idea of having more than one meeting per mm-hmm. quarter. And we were waiting for the new folks to come on board, so everybody was involved in that. And that's the reason why I thought, rather than take up meeting time, which seems to have been an issue of precious time for this committee, once a quarter, four times a year is not a whole lot for an hour. That's why I voted we do it off meeting
yeah.
time.
Yeah, ditto.
Okay. Yeah, that's true.
Okay. That's fine. We can do either way. No, I think that's fine. And I think last time we talked about tabling
yeah,
whether
or not.
Yeah,
we tabled it to bring it back up. Yeah.
So that is something we need to make a decision on.
Yeah.
And then my last item that you don't have, because I just wrote it in. last time we talked about trying to have a speaker at each of our meetings, which I think is a really fabulous idea. And there's lots of great folks in the community, both here and in Buncombe County, that would really, really give us a lot of insight. So we have a speaker today, and I'm going to let Pam introduce our speaker today. I do have a speaker lined up for next month. I just need your go-ahead. Joe Sanders is the president of the local Blue Ridge Bicycle Club, and they're very, very involved at the city level with some local bike boulevards. But they just have a big contingency of cycling enthusiasts that are working throughout the community to try to make it a more bicycle-friendly community. So if that's something you're interested in and you would like for him to be here at the next one, I can get that set up. If you don't want him to come and you want to have somebody else, I will let someone else get a speaker lined up. But I know for sure I've got him ready to go. So
my question is, how do bike paths make for clean water and clean air and
considered? It's an issue of alternative transportation.
And is that not back to the carbon footprint stuff?
It can be if you want to take it in that direction, but it's a method of alternative transportation and allowing people to kind of be in the community rather than in their car on a road in the community. So it's completely up to you guys. He just said he's available if you would like.
Offhand, I'd rather have somebody that knows more about, you know, things we could do to keep the environment clean and safe rather than how we should handle our transportation issues. I don't know. To me, transportation is a separate issue. It's not an environment issue. And there, what do you think?
I think if more people rode bikes, we'd have less carbon in our
less
air.
Emissions and less
less emissions. Less
which affect the water, the air, the everything.
It might have less particulate matter in the air we breathe, that's for sure.
Yeah.
I mean, the reality, though, this is a rural area. I come from suburban Chicago where we had bike trails everywhere, so from a recreational standpoint, it was phenomenal. I don't bicycle here because it's dangerous. I would be curious to know where you would go where you don't need to have a body armor on.
Well, that's the idea of having bike paths.
I'll put apart from that. But, I mean, you're looking at, in an area like this, unbelievable capital expense to have the kind of bike paths that I'm responding to. So I'm not sure that it suits the committee. I probably have more of a curiosity personally, but I could handle that offline than taking up time here.
Yeah, there's definitely not enough room for bicycles out there.
What's that?
There's definitely not enough room for bicycles out there on our street.
And like down in Flat Rock, they tried to get a third lane put in the road through Flat Rock just to make turning for the people.
Yeah.
You know, it seemed a logical thing, but everybody got up in arms and fought that.
Mm-hmm.
So,
We don't have to. I'm just saying he's been very involved with the city. They were successful in getting a bike boulevard put in on 4th Avenue. I would offer from my perspective that part of this committee's charge is to just kind of learn about the different things that are out there. If you don't, he hasn't committed. I know that he's available and he is interested to speak with you. So the other thing I'll say to getting speakers is I'm happy to help arrange things, but if we come up with a list of subjects, I can't necessarily find a speaker for every meeting. So if, you know, we come up with a list of topics and folks know someone that's already involved with whatever that topic is that we agree on and you can get a speaker, we can totally do that. So do you want to put it up to a vote, or do you want to to ask a person to find a speaker for each meeting, or how do you want to?
I would like to mention the fact that the committee as a whole expressed a great deal of interest in getting county commissioners over here to give us an idea of what they wanted from us. Everybody who was there at that time seemed to be interested in maybe that being our next kind of speaker.
Yeah, I'd agree. I'm sitting here looking at Larry, and what comes to my mind just as a for instance is you've got a lot of businesses in this community, in this county, and I would be curious to know from a businessman standpoint, they're already strapped with unbelievable levels of regulations, and I'd like to hear from the business community what's on the table now that they have to work around, so that as we sit around and we kind of discuss and think about what we think should happen, that we don't discount that there's already a considerable burden out there that none of us may be as sensitive to. But Larry, maybe you or someone from your group can speak to that as a person.
Can I offer something back to that? Actually,
yeah,
two of the things that I gave you today are actually right along what you're talking about. I gave you two copies of some articles. And these were written by a gentleman named Don Sheldahl, who was one of the main site selectors and instrumental folks in getting Sierra Nevada to come to Henderson County. He's a professional site selector. He has been around the world doing site selecting for all kinds of companies. So there were two articles that I gave you that he shared with me a couple of weeks ago, and I read them, and I just thought they were very, very interesting, and I just wanted to share them with you. Just as a resource, but they hit exactly on what Glenn is talking about, which is economic development and how the idea of economic development, sustainability, can kind of tie into one another and create a triple bottom line rather than just the bottom line all of the time. So this is not necessarily an item for discussion. I just brought it to you for a resource. So, Pam, my question still stands. Would you like to ask someone to volunteer for the meeting ahead to pick a speaker, or how? Because I think we had decided on having a list of topics that we're interested in hearing about.
Yeah, that are in our old minutes, which
can
you're
get
welcome
him to.
That would be super.
Yeah, absolutely. He was living here and then had to move. He's from Chicago. So let me get up with him and I can.
That's we have somewhat of a bee expert who is working with different methods of pollination and hiving and everything right here locally at Highland Lake. His name is Roger, and we just recently took a trip over there, and we're looking at what he was doing and learning all about the pollinators and doing stuff like that, and that what we can do as individuals to help protect.
I was speaking to someone who shall remain nameless, not present company, and he said that Roger tended to be kind of anti the idea that pesticides could have anything to do with the bee colonies disappearing. And I had it explained to me that you can pour Roundup on a bee and it will just shake it off and go off about its business. But that, you know, that is not what the problem is. The problem is that the Roundup causes a enzyme change in the bee's digestive system, so it no longer is capable of dissolving the little coating that's around each little piece of pollen, and the bees can die in the midst of plenty. You know, so you can plant all the pollinating bushes you want, and still you'd have bees vulnerable. You know, when you're starving, you catch diseases, you catch you're more vulnerable to mites, you, whatever it is that bugs your species, mm-hmm. it's going to bug you more. So that's why I chose this particular expert who seems to have a wider view.
Question,
yes.
Who's the county commissioner responsible or the contact for this committee?
It's Commissioner Young, but he will be rolling off of his seat in November,
yeah.
and then Mr. Lapsley will be coming on, so he won't start fully in his term until December, so I don't think that he'd be able to come to us that soon.
Yeah, where I was going with that, with so many of us relatively new to this committee, I think a level setting with the elected official who oversees this committee would be very helpful, whether we do it, you know, early next year, given that transition.
Yeah.
I would vote for that.
Okay. Who is the one here, the business that I was picking up?
Articles?
Yeah. Oh.
Did you get this?
His name is Don Sheldahl. I mean, if he's around, I can ask him to come. And actually, in the Economic Development Journal article, there's a few pictures in there. Danny's dumpsters I referenced. The MRF, which is the recovery facility where our stuff is, the picture in there. There's downtown Hendersonville. He's partial to our little community here.
I mean, for some time in the future, I mean, I'd love to hear.
Yeah.
And that's the type of thing that. Yeah. I'd be interested in for this committee.
Okay.
Anything that ties in the environment as well as the economic well-being of this community is, I think, the pinnacle of why we're here.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll just keep working.
Can we try to get hold of him? And if that doesn't work, we'll punt by email around if anybody comes up with ideas or such.
Well, you were talking about the commissioners. I got a little thing off the web and tells about each of the commissioners.
Yeah.
And Messer has a background in some environmental committees that he's served on. I don't know if anybody's been aware of it. But he was Cane Creek Water and Sewer District Advisory Committee. He was on the Metropolitan Sewerage District.
All the commissioners are on that.
Yeah. I mean, so I wouldn't mind having him as a commissioner come in maybe and just introduce himself to us.
Yeah, it wouldn't have to be our liaison.
I'll just have to talk to the clerk. I don't know how.
See what their availability
is.
Yeah,
I don't know how. That's not something I can just.
I
can't just ask them,
but
I can get the clerk.
I can. I'll go over and ask them.
So,
hey guys,
he's my neighbor. I can go talk to him.
We're not shy.
Yeah.
You know? I know Charlie really well.
There
we grew up in the same neighborhood.
Okay, well, I'll work on that, and I think we should keep going. So
yes, so we have some time.
So how much time do we have now? Does the meeting end at 4?
I mean, it does, but they throw us out
at 5:30. They get really upset. We're
we
still here.
We have to leave before that because we'll get locked in the building.
Yes.
Yeah.
I want to be respectful of your time. I know that you have a...
Well, I think, would everyone be okay with staying a few minutes past 4?
Sure.
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah.
Phyllis Stiles. Is a member of B. Where is it?
B City USA,
which started out with a research group, and who's studying the things that were wrong with the bees. Like why? I'll hinder mine. Why were the bees disappearing? And you were hired originally to write grants. But she was so enthusiastic about finding information about the bees and being able to disseminate it that that's where your niche is now. Go, girl.
Well, Pam, thanks so much for inviting me to come. I love city commissions. I've served on our Greenway Commission in Asheville for 8 years, and now I'm on the Tree Commission, and so I can tell you a little bit more about that. But and I've served on numerous boards in Asheville, so I know how valuable citizen committees are. And that's why I actually founded BCityUSA. Yeah, and I'm the executive director of BCityUSA, and it's my volunteer passion. In my full-time work, in my paid work, I'm a fundraiser for UNC Asheville. And I used to be the director of Blue Ridge Forever, which is the coalition of all the land trusts in Western North Carolina. And so I'm very familiar with Carolina Mountain Land Conservancy here in Henderson County and have great admiration for the work that they do. I've been in this community in Western North Carolina since 1974,
and you could not pull me out of here with a crowbar. I love it so much. I'm so happy that Western North Carolina is my home. But up until about 5 years ago, the little bugs escaped my attention. They were just little bugs, and I'd always admired bugs my whole life and marveled at their beauty. And people kind of teased me about it and said, really? You think that bug's beautiful? And but I had no academic training and very little appreciation of what the bugs did except for watching TV, just like all of us do. What happened was colony collapse disorder happened in 2006 when the word went out that something was very, very wrong with our honeybee population. And what was happening was that beekeepers were going to their hives and finding what appeared to be a healthy hive with a queen, with lots of brood, with lots of honey, but all the worker bees were gone, mysteriously gone. It made no sense. If you have a healthy, thriving hive with lots of honey, lots of brood, a healthy queen, what else do you need? That seems ideal, right? So it was kind of like Rachel Carson's Silent Spring. It got everybody's attention because $15 billion of our agricultural industry in this country is attributed to largely honeybees, but other pollinators as well. A lot of plants rely on bees and other pollinators to produce their fruit. Depending on who you talk to, 75 to 85% of the flowering plants on the planet cannot reproduce. That means that plant will eventually disappear off the face of the earth were it not for an animal pollinator. And so when we talk about the pollinators, the bees are the workhorses. That's why I always like to bring this chart. We all think honeybees because that's what we're most familiar with, and my goodness, is honey good. And we like the wax. In fact, that's why the colonists brought bees with them from Europe in the 1600s was for the wax. It wasn't for the honey. It wasn't for the pollination services. It was because they needed light. They needed the wax. And so that's when bees entered the Americas. Before that, we didn't have honeybees. Of the 20,000 species of bees on the planet, only 4 to 9 are actually honeybees. And the reason I say 4 to 9 is because the taxonomists classify them differently, and so somewhere in the range of 4 to 9 of the 20,000 are honeybees. The rest are bees that some of you have heard of, some of them you've not heard of. Sweat bees can be very irritating, but my goodness, are they beautiful with that iridescent green color. They're great pollinators. Carpenter bees can be very annoying, but we wouldn't have passion fruit without carpenter bees. We've got digger bees, we've got alkali bees, polyester bees, squash bees, minor bees. The list goes on and on. There's 20,000 of them. And they are largely not social. Largely, they're solitary bees. The honeybee is famous for being a very social bee. A honeybee cannot live by itself. It has to live in a colony. The bumblebee is the other famous social bee. They live underground in colonies of about 500 to 600 bees. But the rest are largely solitary bees. Now, why do we talk about bees so much, and why did we call our organization Bee City USA? Because bees intentionally collect pollen. They evolved from the wasp millions and millions of years ago because they discovered that they could feed their young and supply all of their nutritional needs with pollen and nectar. And so whereas wasps eat other insects and, you know, they're carnivores and they feed their young meat via insects, bees do not. They feed their young strictly pollen and nectar. So they intentionally collect that pollen. That's why their bodies are so furry, so that the pollen is magnetically attracted to their little furry bristles all over their body, so they can get it back to their young. So they're the workhorses of the pollinator world. But the other pollinators are butterflies, wasps, they're minor pollinators. Moths, beetles. Beetles were probably the first pollinators, and probably the first flower on the planet was a magnolia. And also hummingbirds, you're well aware of. They brush their forehead when they stick their beaks in those long tubular flowers, and then they go to the next flower, and that little pollen on their forehead goes to that next flower. Bats, not in the east, but in the western United States, bats are a significant pollinator. So there are lots of different animal pollinators. And over millions of years, they evolved with the plants to do very, very specific jobs. And so I particularly love this chart that's available online, and you can't see it, but I'm just going to tell you a little bit about it. Because what it tells you is how different pollinators are physically adapted to pollinate certain flowers. And so I mentioned the tubular flowers that the hummingbirds love. Well, hummingbirds like red flowers. Bees can't see red. Their composite eyes absolutely cannot see the color red, so they do not pollinate red flowers. There are certain flowers that only release their scents at night, and those attract the moths. So when you start to look at the size of a pollinator's body and the length of their tongues, there are some pollinators whose tongues are longer than their whole bodies, and they spiral up and bring them back in their mouth, in their jaws, and then whip them out when they need them. And they're just as fine as your finest strand of hair. But boy, are they effective at collecting that nectar down in the base of the flower. So the alarm went out with colony collapse disorder, and suddenly people started to pay attention to the pollinators. In North Carolina, our Cooperative Extension Service offered people hives if they were willing to take the bee classes. Every winter, all of the bee clubs, including Henderson County's bee club, offers bee classes. It's the only time that you hope you will get a bee. You're supposed to laugh. And so that's when I became aware of the pollinators, because my husband said, you know, I think I would like to learn how to be a beekeeper. So he went to the class. For 4 years, I stood back at a distance, and I cheered him on, and I said, this is great, this is great. I'm so proud of you for being a beekeeper. But after about 4 years of that, I started going to the various presentations about bees. And I was lucky enough that in Asheville, there's a thing called the Center for Honeybee Research, which was hosting annual conferences with some of the most renowned scientists in the country to come talk about what was going on with bees. And through that process, I also started watching the documentaries about what was happening with bees. And I was just totally seduced. The bees seduced me. And instead of what we so often do, of saying, well, gosh, isn't that sad? I wish we could do something about that. I went to our bee club one night, and I asked if I could have a few minutes to talk. And I said to the group, there's got to be something we can do. We keep hearing about all the bee declines. Would anybody else like to form a committee with me and talk about, you know, what we might do? Instead of just wringing our hands and watching it happen, maybe we can do something. So a lot of hands went up, and we started meeting, and we formed Bee City USA. In fact, one of my friends, when you know we were having a glass of wine not long after that, and she said, so what you been up to? I said, well, I've been working really hard on Bee City USA. And there were two friends there, actually. And we talked about it for a while, and finally, after about 5 minutes, they said, Phyllis, why would you want to start an organization called Obesity USA? Isn't there enough out there about obesity? And I realized then that this was going to take some explanation. So we got busy, and we looked at different models around the country of various programs that had been born to raise awareness of some kind of environmental issue, and how those programs were structured. And we decided to use the model of Tree City USA because we thought it fit well with what we were trying to do. Because back in the 70s when we had the bicentennial and we had all the Keep America Beautiful activities, the Arbor Day Foundation decided that that was a good time to launch Tree City USA to raise awareness of how important the urban canopy is. And they did some very, very simple things. They said you have to have a standing committee that is concerned about tree issues in your community if you want to be a Tree City USA. You have to put up a street sign saying you're a Tree City USA. You have to, we diverge at some point, but those are the things that we copied. And you have to have regular meetings, and you have to reapply for your status every year with a report that says what you did the previous year. So we use all of those elements, and we also require that you do an annual, they do an annual proclamation. We copied that. And you do some kind of annual awareness event, and you have a link to BCDUSA on your website, because what we're trying to do is to create a network of cities that learn from each other about what they can do to help the pollinators. And so this is how it's evolved in Asheville. We have this pollination celebration every year, and it coincides with National Pollinator Week. And so Henderson County Beekeepers actually helped us with that this year. And we brought Jeff Pettis, who was until last month the leader of the National Bee Lab for the USDA in Beltsville, Maryland. And he was our keynote speaker for two nights. One of those nights was at the Fletcher Research Station in Mills River. And we had standing room only crowd. It was really good. Did anybody go to that? No. It was mostly beekeepers, and we had beekeepers there from seven counties. It was just a wonderful night. But as you'll see on that list of things, there's so many ways that you can raise awareness in your community of the importance of pollinators and what you can do to help. We spend a lot of time at festivals and events putting antenna on kids, and a lot of people know me by my antenna, and I just got back from San Francisco visiting with a woman there who wants San Francisco to become a BCDUSA. And after our evening together, as we were walking back to our car, she said, Phyllis, I got to tell you, I don't do antenna. And I said, that's fine. You know, we don't require that you wear antenna. But I can tell you that when we put on those silly antenna, that people smile at us and they're open to talking about what's happening with the bees. I can also tell you that that we were afraid that the fact that bees had stingers would prevent Asheville and other cities from ever considering adopting a resolution to be a BCDUSA. And to our nice, pleasant surprise, it hasn't stood in the way, and people get the bigger picture of how important the ecosystem services are that pollinators provide, and they've gotten past the stingers. And I guess I've talked to at least 25 people, at least, who have said, I'm deathly allergic to bees. I get anaphylactic shock.
That's right.
I'm one.
I've met so many people, and they said, but I get it. I understand the importance of the pollinators, and I support what you're doing. Some of them are even beekeepers who are still beekeepers. I know. It's mind-boggling to me. That's dedication. I'll call it dedication.
Better they figure if they've got that suit on, they're probably safer than the other guys.
Well, that's true. That's true. But anyway, so what it's done in Asheville is we've created a pollinator-friendly plant list that's on the BCDUSA website that you can download. We surveyed all the nurseries in the area, the plant nurseries, to find out which plants they carry. We stress native plants. That's what we ask people to plant, because what we find on all the garden tours that we're a part of, because we have signs that we put in people's gardens, that give clues about what you can do to become more friendly to pollinators, is that we have so adopted exotic plants that now we have plants that our native pollinators don't even recognize. And so we really encourage people to plant native plants for a host of reasons. You know, what they do to benefit our native pollinators is one, But there are many, many, many reasons for why we need to bring back the natives.
Is a lot of that list going to be similar for Henderson County?
Yes, very much so. It will be. So I also have these, if you're interested in really nice information. These, and please, you know, don't feel like you have to take these things, but these are all good resources, and I'm very conscious of the time. I can tell you that we are reaching out across the country, and we're in conversations with 30 cities right now. Asheville became the inaugural BCDUSA in June of 2012, and now Talent, Oregon became our second BCDUSA a few weeks ago. And in a couple of weeks, they're going to have their Harvest Festival, and their whole city council is going to be wearing their BCDUSA T-shirts, and they're going to be putting up a street sign, and they're going to be passing out seed packets that are pollinator-friendly and native locally. So they're on their way, and their neighbor, Ashland, Oregon, is dying to become a BCDUSA, so that's probably going to happen soon. Seattle, Washington is very aggressive in becoming a BCUSA. Washington, D.C. is working on it. Cities across the country are talking about adopting the resolution and completing the application, all of which are on our website. And I had Rachel print this off for you, and originally I thought that I would just go over this presidential memorandum with you, but since we don't have a lot of time, I'm going to stop with that, but just tell you that about 2 years from the day that we started BCDUSA with Asheville's unanimous adoption of the resolution, the White House came out with this memo after a lot of pressure from people all across the country and a huge summit in Washington to try to get the federal government to take pollinators seriously. And this is a total endorsement of what we're doing at BCDUSA. It's all about planting friendly habitats, using less, if not no, pesticides. And the sweet little secret about all of this is if we do what's right for the pollinators, we will make ourselves so much healthier. So much healthier. Oh, my goodness. And so the bees are telling us something. If we'll listen, we're going to be much better off for it. But it all comes down to habitat and your conversation earlier about pesticides. The joke with beekeepers is if you have two beekeepers in a room and you ask them a question about bees, you're going to get three opinions. So there's a lot of disagreement about how to approach pesticide use or non-use. There's a lot of disagreement about whether or not to use chemicals in your beehives. There's a lot of disagreement about the stress on planting native plants and what is a native plant. There's a lot of disagreement out there. And so at BCDUSA, we're trying to use the best science we can get our hands on. That's why I attended the International Pollinator Conference at Penn State University in the fall, and I sat through 50 presentations, and by God, every one of them had their chart. I'm dangerous with this thing. Every one of them had their bar charts and told you their procedures, and, you know, it was very scientific from around the world. And I just visited with the Pollinator Partnership, which is the leading advocacy organization in the United States. They're in San Francisco to find ways that we can work together, and we've got some exciting things coming up. But all that to say that it's not a soundbite. It's not simple. What's simple is that we need more flowers. That's simple. Flowers are pretty. That's simple. We need less pesticides. That's simple. So we try to keep everybody on the same page with the simple parts. We are struggling with the right message about neonicotinoid pesticides because that's an area of hot debate, and three cities have banned them in their cities. The European Union have banned them for 2 years, certain categories of neonics. So we're learning, and we're trying to look to the science to provide the best leadership we can for communities. But what we know is if you do those things, have flowers blooming from spring to fall, and you provide places for pollinators to nest and overwinter, and you use less pesticides, we're all already way ahead of where we are now. I'll stop there and take questions.
What is the situation with the population at the moment?
With the population of pollinators generally?
Yeah,
or
has it stabilized now or what?
Oh, heavens no.
Yeah. So it's still going down?
Yes. The honeybee, we had more positive numbers this year. Jeff Pettis at that talk I mentioned earlier told how many managed honeybee hives there are in Europe, and I want to say it's something like 35 or 40 million. Europe is a much smaller landmass than we are, and in America we only have about 2.5 million honeybee hives. And every winter we're seeing less and less of the honeybee hives survive, the colonies survive. So this year, as I say, it was a little bit better than last year. But our commercial hives are almost all of 100%. Almost all of them are going to the almond orchards in the San Joaquin Valley that I just went through on my way to Yosemite to pollinate the almond orchards in January and February.
Mm-hmm.
So it's taking every last one of them we've got just to do that one crop, and then those hives those colonies have to circulate around the country doing that work of commercial pollination. So it's dire, and the monarch butterfly is probably the best example of just how dire it is. You know, they make their 2,000-mile migration from Canada to Mexico on our side of the country, and I went to the monarch habitat in Mexico many years ago and just saw acres of monarchs blanketing the ground and wading down the trees till the trees were hanging so full you didn't recognize them for the fir trees that they are. And now it's down to, I mean, it's getting more and more doubtful that we will see a monarch migration in 10 years.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty frightening.
It's gotten almost non-existent. I mean, for people who grew up here in this area, I knew as a child when the migration would happen, it would just amazed me because you could step outside and they were all over you.
Oh, you're so
lucky. And
then
as the years passed, it just was less and less and less and less and less. And that's one of the things that interests me a lot is the monarch forest. And I'm studying it. I've seen the huge decline, and it's a sadness. It really is.
It's tragic. And
I did see, I think it was called Sweet as Honey. Is that the documentary?
More Than Honey.
More Than Honey.
Mm-hmm.
It's depressing. I will tell you, it was very depressing, but it's incredible, and that almond orchard pollination is in that, if you're interested to check it out.
Mm-hmm.
My question was, with Asheville becoming a bee city, USA, did you work with the NCDOT a lot or at all, or have you worked with them as far as some of the pollinating that they do when they replant along the roadways, or what's the relationship?
We really look to Doug Tallamy, who's an authority on the relationship between pollinators and, I mean, not pollinators so much, but native plants and their relationship to native fauna. And so he spends a lot of time in his book, Bringing Nature Home, talking about the opportunities to work with the DOT. And I understand that there's some good work going on in Florida. It's just getting started, but... So that's definitely one of the things on our radar. And we used to have a really great native wildflower plant program in North Carolina, but it seems like they've gotten further and further away from the native plants that the DOT plants. But that is definitely an area of opportunity and something that's talked about as a technique to pay a lot of attention to in this White House memo that you have. The president has asked almost every federal agency, from the Department of Defense to the DOT to the USDA, to many agencies in here, to plant more natives, use less pesticides, leave areas for the pollinators to nest and overwinter. And so we're so pleased with this. The pollinator advocacy community is so thrilled that we're taking it seriously now. I brought this magazine because this was the cover of Time magazine this summer, in August. No, I'm sorry, this was summer before last. And Jeff Pettis was quoted, as well as many others, in this wonderful article they did about what's happening with the bees. And, you know, Jeff Pettis said that it's kind of a roll of the dice. We're at that point where it's so serious. It could go either way. And that's why we brought him to speak here. So we're pleased that our federal government is taking it seriously. And we've seen past initiatives like that on the part of the federal government where it really made a difference, where once you send out the message to federal agencies, then they become a model for everybody else to adopt different behaviors. And we feel like municipalities can show that leadership. Municipalities can do things on their own property and endorse messages that get out to the population. I remember as a little girl when the safety belt regulations came into play, and my parents grumbled, I can't believe they're making us wear safety belts, and everybody grumbled. And now, you know, don't you feel kind of naked if you don't put on that safety belt when you get in the car? It's become natural. We're trying to make people more PC, more pollinator conscious. So that's our goal. And with awareness comes the power to do something. And so once people become aware, I mean, just today, the attorney at UNC Asheville called me and she said, Phyllis, this is not anything to do with UNCA, but we've got bees. We just bought a house and there are bees right between us and our car and I don't know what to do. And so we had a conversation. It turns out they weren't bees. And I said, you know, if they're threatening you, you're going to have to get rid of them. Because she said, you know, can we have somebody come remove them? She thought they were honeybees. They were in the ground. Honeybees don't live in the ground. So, you know, once people become aware, they try to take action to help. And so that's the power of what Henderson can do and what you can do.
What can we do? If we wanted to go to the county commissioners and say, resolve that, think. What? Plant pollinators every place we own property. Use less pesticides. I read a thing that said there's a vinegar that you can use that kills plants.
There's even controversy about that. I mean, some people consider that an organic alternative to synthetic pesticides. Everybody has agreement that integrated pest management is nobody can argue with that. That's a good thing. It's where you acknowledge that there are a lot of beneficial insects that keep your pesky insects in control. And so, it takes education. You really have to be conscientious if you're going to go that way, but it's certainly better for the environment.
Well, what have the results of these bans and things, is there any empirical data that shows that this course of action and that course of action will result in this desired result?
We're gathering the case studies right now of communities that have adopted organic methods for managing their landscapes. Mm-hmm. We don't have that yet, but we're gathering that.
Because my fear is that you mentioned Rachel Carson. Well, mm-hmm. I remember that, and we all went galloping off on our horses and banned DDT, which has resulted in endless deaths of little children in Africa who get malaria and get bitten by tsetse flies and get break bone fever and terrible, terrible deaths to little children because we're no longer spraying with DDT. And on the other side, it's turned out that there has not been the die-off of birds that in areas that use DDT that you talked about. And all those soldiers that were sprayed down head to foot for lice with DDT, no residual effects. You know, when the data came out, it contradicted what she was saying. So I don't want to get on my horse and go galloping off in the wrong direction. And so I'm very interested in the outcome.
Well, I mean, there's from the White House on down to all those 50 science reports that I heard at Penn State, to all of the different organizations and universities that are conducting science, there is universal agreement that it's the loss of habitat that has been the most devastating to the pollinators. I mean, just look around you. Try. I mean, if you imagine that you're a bee looking for food, it's hard to find some flowers right now. We cut down the goldenrod. We cut down the, you know, milkweed is almost impossible to find anymore, and that's what the monarch relies on for laying their eggs. So that's simple. That, I mean, you know, the evidence is absolutely clear. We need more flowers in our habitat. And they can be trees. They can be shrubs.
Almond trees.
Well,
sourwood.
Sourwood.
Somebody said sourwood trees. Plant a sourwood tree if you have a choice. So I guess what I'm looking for is a list of things we can do
That would be one suggest to the county that on the county properties they put in local fauna that can be pollinated.
And instead of round-upping the verges, but we don't have data to say that
they're going to be any better. There are organizations that have lots of good information, and I'll try to go back and maybe come up with a short list of the ones that I think have the best advice on pesticides.
Yeah.
I don't feel that we're an authority yet. We just refer to the most credible groups that we can find.
Because if we could plant some kind of plant that would keep the weeds down and also make the bees happy and make it so we can use less pesticides, that's a no-brainer.
And plant natives. Plant native plants. That's huge.
So we go online and get your lists. Are they designated as natives or not natives?
Oh, they're everything on the list is native. And it tells you which nurseries sell them. Some of them are around here. And the list is always expanding, and we're always checking back with the nurseries because they're adding things, and we're going back to them to be sure that they still carry them.
Are trees on that list too?
Trees and shrubs, vines, perennial plants. This is Xerces Society is the other leader in the country on pollinator information, and they're also very scientific. And so this is the Pollinator Protection Pledge. We ask people to consider going on their site and signing the Pollinator Protection Pledge.
We are having, we also have a conservation, environmental conservation club that I'm the president and she's upcoming vice.
Oh, I almost used to take that position.
But we're having a club rush upcoming the next week, and I was going to ask permission to use some of your materials.
Oh, gosh, yes. And my favorite booklet is that the basics, the Bee Basics book. And we get those free from the U.S. Forest Service. I've got boxes of them in my car.
Awesome.
They are, and the Pollinator Partnership worked hand in hand with them to develop that booklet. And that's just the caliber of the educational materials that they produce.
And this is something that interests me a lot also, as well as with the, like you were talking about, all the native plants and flowers and things like that. And the more native plants that we can get, the better we can increase or get back what we're losing in our soil production and what the nitrogen, oxygen fixation from the native plants do for the regeneration of soil. And I mean, it's just amazing how each thing touches something else in the environment, and it doesn't function without the whole picture.
That's right.
So with all the elements. So that's something that I would really like to get the information out on our campus. And
yeah, I'd be and you know, if you want to talk after this, I can tell you about all kinds of materials.
Okay, that's awesome. Yes, thank you.
Who could we talk to in the gardening world, landscape architecture? Who takes care of the city's parks and makes the decisions about what plants and things they use, and could tell us whether it would be cost effective to plant stuff that you didn't need to mow and you didn't need to put pesticides on? Compared to planting things that need that kind of thing?
The city of Hendersonville, it would be probably their public works or parks and recreation. In the county, it would be
probably within engineering, and I would bet that at the county level we already have something probably that kind of maybe dictates how that process works depending on what the property is. There are certain things, so for instance at the transfer station we have two closed landfills. There are certain things we have to do to maintain them, so we can't not mow. We don't have to use pesticide, but we can't not mow it. You know, so it has to be sort of height and all this kind of very, very specific stuff. So
but could they be planting alfalfa or something that flowers instead of grass?
I'm sure they could. It just, again, would depend on the property and the use. But, I mean, it's worth investigating. I mean, I can find out at county level. That's why I was interested in DOT, because they have their own list of how they do things and what they do plant and don't plant and how they take care of stuff.
Yeah.
So that would be a whole separate
issue. Which may or may not be even taking this into consideration.
And more than likely not.
Yeah.
And that's why this is so exciting, because they're going to have to start taking it into consideration.
So
yeah, in fact, they are guilty of introducing a lot of the invasive plants that we have.
That's what I was about to say, is that they get a lot of invasive species because they have deeper root systems, and their roots go down deeper, so they hold the soil more, so of runoff and erosion.
But I would be remiss if I didn't tell you this one little factoid. California is the only state that records pesticide use. It's the only one. When they look at who's using pesticides, a third, and it's a big agricultural state, a third is being used by agriculture. Two-thirds is being used by us, homeowners, golf courses, parks, and we're not trained. At least in agriculture, they have to get certified to use pesticides. Homeowners are not certified. And so, you know, the mentality is, if a little bit's good, then more is probably better. And so, you know, we are all contributing to the demise of the pollinators, and so we can all turn that around.
I have a question. Here in the county, how much of the county land is actually occupied by humans or worked by humans? Do we have an idea what that is?
That map you just gave me.
Yeah, I'm sure we could easily figure out. And Pam asked, and I can share it with all of you too, but she had just asked for me to get a map made by planning that's, it's, does it have a title on it? It's conservation. It's the different types of land that are owned by public and private entities throughout the county, or federal entities, or whatever.
This number in my head is that only about 5% of the landmass in the entire U.S. is actually occupied by humans. So in my own estimation, that's a huge amount of property that we don't touch in terms of us and what we do. So to me, that what's fascinating about this is, if I use pesticides on our property, how does that affect the land that's not occupied, and how far away, you know, what's the reach of that, what's the extension?
I don't think that statistic is correct, though, because, you know, I used to be up on all these numbers when I was doing the land conservation work, but I'm rusty now. But with the rate of development and the fact that for each individual who's born today, we will develop about 2.1 acres, not because of their little footprint, but because of all the other activities that we do. We entertain ourselves, we go to church, we go to school, we, you know, all those things, and we're doing everything in a much bigger way than we did 100 years ago. So I can't imagine that that's an accurate number. I mean, it may
but
be
you're
right.
Speculating, you don't know. Because when you fly over, you go west of the Mississippi and you look down, you don't see much. I mean, the western half is two-thirds of this country.
But
you know,
having people there, I think it's versus being managed land, so that it's not natural land.
Right.
Because if it's in agriculture or if it's...
The example earlier about the monarchs going to Mexico, I mean, to me what I wonder is, are they going somewhere else? Because, you know, in the environment that we live in, I think, you know, there's plenty of examples where animal and plant life adapt to changing conditions. So it may be true that there's no longer a migration like there was in Mexico, but maybe those monarchs are going somewhere else. And I'm not saying I know, I'm just posing that question.
It still might die off because you're looking at a statistic of 98% of every animal that's ever lived is now extinct.
Yes.
I mean, that's a
and people have.
When you look at the age of the earth.
Scientists, environmentalists, everybody looked for.
If that's where it's at. The monarchs were well established in their path.
Yeah.
Yeah, it was perfectly adapted because their wings will dry out, and
yeah.
So they had to go to that high elevation forest to for the moisture.
Their cycle of life is very
limited
to what they do.
Yeah.
They're very particular because
extensive studies and people and scientists following their migration patterns over years and years and
they're
years.
They're tagging them. You can find them where
they're
you tag.
They're just going away.
Yeah, and they're studied heavily because they're because of that. They, you know, they're
Nature's amazing. There may be a succession to it. You know, something will come to take its place in its niche.
And plus, they're finding things like Tasmanian devils and things that they thought were extinct. They're now creeping out of the forest again. So sometimes, you know, they survive in spite of us.
Can I ask where is Talon in Oregon?
Is it near
Medford?
I don't know about Medford. It's next door to Ashland. It's at the southern tip of the Rogue Valley.
Yeah.
I don't know if that helps.
Okay. Yeah, then it's near Medford as well.
Oh, okay.
I'm trying to find that map. Let me pass that back around here to make sure I didn't forget. Oh, it's going around? Was that the right map?
Are there any other questions?
Thank you. I appreciate the opportunity. Are you really? Oh, to watch. Yeah, Yellow Jacket to watch.
I passed around one more map with holes in it.
Yeah, reached here anyway.
Yeah, that one reached to us.
The thing with the bees in Henderson County is our industry, a lot of our industry is agriculture, and they're dependent.
Well, a lot of farmers
do
get bees and put bees in the middle of their farm. I live in the middle of an apple orchard.
I was wondering if there might be a possibility that we could approach even some of the business owners, manufacturers and stuff who have...
Mm-hmm.
A little corner somewhere that's unoccupied
in county,
and that we could
a vacant lot. You know,
we could put a box up, and I would be glad to go and approach several business owners, ask their permission. I would do the planning and maintaining.
I think we have the head of our city USA committee.
But I mean that's to at the.
I
have 5 grandchildren, and I'm scared for them. I'm scared for what they're going to grow up in, and I'm scared for what we're taking away from them. What I grew up in was amazing compared to what they're growing up in. And, I mean, I had clean streams to play in. I had butterflies.
Mm-hmm.
I had all that stuff.
And there's a name for that. When it skips a generation and you can't remember the songbirds or you can't remember the butterflies, you never knew they existed, so you don't miss them. And there's a scientific name for that phenomenon of, you know, losing things. Here's our sign-up sheet if anybody's interested in being on our e-newsletter list. We love keeping in touch.
And I was going to suggest, too, maybe our local carbon extension agriculture agent would want to come and speak, or we could go over to their place or something. The Master Gardeners have some gardens out there, and also at Jackson Park, and I know that they've got awesome, awesome pollinator plants there. That could be a field trip. Or we could have I do think having a cooperative extension agent come and speak with us would be a great. Even maybe the director.
So to find out what they are doing, so we don't go galloping off saying, why aren't you doing this?
And soil and water.
Soil and water.
Absolutely.
And the local bee Beekeepers, is it association or?
It's a chapter of the state association.
So they would be a better, they could direct us, I think, a little bit better than we could direct ourselves when it comes to that.
Sounds a good idea.
I'll be your investigator. Just send me where you want
to. Find out what they're asking already and what their rules are and what we need to change.
And Carolina Mountain Land Conservancy is starting to put way stations, monarch way stations, on conserved lands. They're working with landowners who have easements on their land to develop way stations.
They were just out of Pisco Forest and they have way stations there.
Oh, cool.
I know they're getting ready to do the golf course at Highland Lake.
Yeah.
Well, they're getting ready to do some species identification the plants and things out there. And
they're going to do the reforestation, so can it be re-deforestation?
Yeah, I'm thinking on the lines of can we.
Because the price of the trees are the same, whether they buy one that's exotic or native. And even if they don't flower, they could be larval hosts. For example, the Quercus genus, the oak genus, is a host to more than 500 species of butterflies and moths. And they don't flower, but that's where the butterflies and moths lay their eggs. That's a huge genus. There are lots of species of oaks. It's kind of hard to go wrong with an oak tree.
Cool. Thank you so much for coming along with us.
Thank you.
And I know you're exhausted. Do you get jet lag coming this way or is it only that?
I'm getting back to normal.
So our next
meeting. Oh, we all won't get far without that.
Yeah, get out to the
farm. Our next meeting is the 4th,
December.
Well, it's quarterly. Once a quarter. 3 months
from today. Well, is there a table that discussion about maybe more frequently?
Well, let's discuss it.
Well, we mentioned that last month, so it would be a good time, I think, to review it this time.
You want to talk about it next time,
sir? No, I said, we talked about it 3 months ago, so 3 months has gone by.
Yeah,
and
six months.
Let's hash it out. Okay, you ready?
Let's only give it 10 minutes.
Okay.
Give it time on it.
So, Alan was the one that brought it up, make the case.
Well, if you're talking about a subject and we have, for example, a case study like in energy or certain aspects of it, you lose the train of thought if there's huge gaps in between the first presentation and the second part of it. Secondly, I just think you tend to lose association with the broad aspects in here. In any case, 3 months is quite a gap. I would contrast that with the city of Hendersonville, which meets monthly. And in my opinion, most organizations probably do meet monthly or worse, bi-monthly. So my case is either meet monthly or bi-monthly. I would prefer monthly, personally.
I would like to see the frequency increase, whether it be monthly or bi-monthly. In my particular case, since I work 12-hour days when I work, that may put me in jeopardy of missing more meetings, but I don't think the committee members would... I feel committee members lose enthusiasm over this committee when there's such a gap. And then you got to spend time trying to think about what was discussed last meeting. And, you got to exert some mental capacity that could probably get put to a better use. Another last meeting, what we did 3 months ago. Just my opinion.
My opinion, I would like to see more meetings also.
My opinion, I kind of like your idea, Rachel, of going and seeing more things outside of the meeting, and you want more meetings, I understand, but if you did have a meeting every month, but every other month had an in-here meeting, and in between each one of those months you did outside the community meeting.
Well, according to our charter, I mean, we could call a meeting any month. I mean, if we kicked up the frequency, say, twice a month,
I think we have to run it through something with bylaws or something to make
it
legit. Yeah,
the bylaws. It allows us to do it, I believe. Yeah. We got the copies last meeting.
Yeah.
So if we went every bi-monthly and then reserved the right to call special meeting, depending on what was going on.
How do you feel about that?
I hear the argument. It makes sense to get together more frequently at times. What I'm missing is the context of what we're doing. I mean, to me, the frequency of when we meet and how we meet right now is a bit of a mystery because I don't know where we're headed. Are we, as an organization here, gathering up possibilities of things that we could hand off to elected officials and say, well, we could do this, we could do that? Or are we here with a specific targeted mission, which may require us to meet weekly, depending on the issue, or quarterly, you know?
We serve to advise and present to the county commissioners.
Right.
They tell us what they want us to do. We're here as a tool for them.
So what is it right now this committee is working on? And in that context, what is this committee working on behalf of the elected officials?
That's why we want to meet with the elected officials.
Because I don't know the answer to that.
I think more frequent meetings would allow us to carry a ball. I mean, I see right now we have a good speaker in here, if I can help you see.
Right.
She's willing to carry a ball right now. By next meeting, we're going to have a different speaker. We're going to be on a completely different subject. We're
right.
going to be going off somewhere else.
Right.
And that I've seen happen in the 2 years I've been involved with. The only time it didn't was right when I joined this committee, and they talked almost every meeting, there was something about Seven Falls because it was such a hot topic.
It's a hot topic, yeah.
All right?
Yeah.
But I agree. I mean, we need a direction, or a couple directions, but we need the time to carry the ball forward in whatever direction we choose to go. So we can make recommendations.
But I think technically they're supposed to tell us what they want to
right.
study, which is why I'm gung-ho on getting them here.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Can we not also present them with
ideas?
It has happened in the past. I mean, that is past practice where this committee has suggested things that can be and vice versa, where the county commissioners have given us a job.
The commissioners are also looking to this committee as they look to all of their advisory capacity committees to advise them things that would make our community a healthier, safer, more economically friendly. I mean, whatever it is that this committee is focused on, they want to hear from you as people with interest and expertise on this committee as to things that are going to enhance the community. So they've got a lot of really big things on their plate right now, as they do every single day, being in their position. So I don't think that they would be opposed to coming and speaking with us, but they are going to ask for your thoughts and opinions on where this committee should be driving itself. So I think it could go both ways. I mean, I honestly think at this point they're going to say, well, what do you think? And as a committee, that's going to be where, you know, this group needs to come up with a united front as what are some of the things that we're concerned about being citizens here that we want to help improve.
Kind of like the squeaky wheel gets the oil.
We do a lot. We spent the last couple of meetings and we basically just jacked.
And there's nothing wrong with that. I think it's part of why we're all here is to educate one another and to learn from
Absolutely.
One another. And I love having speakers come because it opens up all of our eyes and ears to things.
And we see opportunities
right.
That this committee could work on, but it doesn't go forward.
Can I, David? You're on the city's environmental sustainability board. How do issues come to you to your board? Is it from the city council or?
Well, it works both ways in reality. The mayor and the city manager have brought themes to us to investigate, and we report back to them, and then they can use that information in, making, like the League of Municipalities, they had some challenge. And so we studied all the aspects of the challenge, enable the city to compete more effectively. But I also think we've done a great job in taking topics of interest to us as a group and then bringing them to the attention of the mayor and city manager and other elected officers. So it really cuts both ways. But I think the worst is to have a committee who doesn't really generate any ideas. Above all, I agree, is that the councillors are looking for ideas. You can't expect them to be experts in ecology and environmental matters particularly. They might or might not be, but on the whole, you can't expect them to be. So I think we have to really generate ideas above all.
You know, though, I think somewhere back in time, someone in an elected office said we need an environmental advisory committee. And with an idea of they're going to produce what. And without the benefit of that, we're going to spend a lot of time exchanging ideas. And I think I heard you say that don't go anywhere. That we kind of talk about stuff here, we don't move forward. So I personally am not energized by that. To me, what energizes me is if there's a problem out there that we can agree upon that needs attention, and then we work towards solving if, let's just say, there's a problem like that. That to me would be more interesting, and that would then dictate the frequency of the meetings. It would be, you know, what is it that we're actually working on? Because if it's just idea generation, it's hard to put a time frame on that.
Well, you have people to do it, too. You know, like you said, Sheila's willing to go out there and do it. I mean, we can sit here and talk all day and blow smoke up each other.
And
we're in, but if none of us go out there and do anything about it, then what's the point?
Sure, but the context here, we don't exist in a vacuum. We're here as an extension of the county commissioners. That's an elected body. So, you know, as a reflection of the county that elected them, they put us in place, and so we're in effect commissioned by them to work on environmental issues, whatever that means.
Well, I think when something comes up like the plastic bag thing,
yeah.
It's a way of their handing a little responsibility to somebody else and covering themselves a bit.
Sure.
So it probably functions that way. When they are irritated by something, then they can pass it
to somebody else.
Yeah, it's the advisory nature of this group,
we're
too.
Gonna,
yeah.
We're going to
pass it to somebody else.
And that's our function. But I don't know. You know, last thing I was all hot for was burning the garbage.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Mm. And now I'm all excited about these, but I think should be.
That's my exact point. I'm excited about these.
Yeah. Well, we did. I think we beat the other one to death.
We did. We found it too expensive.
And yeah, we came to a conclusion and we even voted on it.
Now with
but
the
it
bees,
could have gone the other way.
With the bees, with this speaker right now, we can move forward, find out who on the county is in charge of their land and what groundskeeping and what are the what guidelines do they follow?
I think that within this committee,
what our speaker would suggest for the committee to do.
And within the committee, I think that communication between each of us on a certain level, not just at a meeting, so we can you know push those ideas. Each one of us gather information on something that we want to see happen within the community that we can present to the commissioners, as well as them giving us a task.
I would like.
I'm not sure. Are we working on any task right now that comes from the county commission?
No.
I'm not aware that we are.
No.
So there's a vacuum. In my judgment, there's a vacuum there that begs the question of us to them. What's their vision?
Well, I'm in the charter for this committee and the bylaws. I can't find my copy, but it does say that this committee is charged with advising the commissioners on. Shall assist and advise the Board of Commissioners on matters regarding environmental quality and protection. This may include comprehensive analysis, recommendations, expertise, policies, and such other matters as the Board of Commissioners deems appropriate. So it's back and it's a back and forth conversation. So what I'm hearing from where I sit to help all of you is to chat with the clerk of the board and kind of see, with the changing of the commissioners, who the one who's appointed to our committee, kind of see where they sit with having someone come and kind of talk about some of the things that maybe they would like us to think about.
So present us with a task that they want, but give us the opportunity to say, okay, but this is what we see also, and this is what needs to be addressed by you.
I make a suggestion that we do the B thing for 3 months, that we meet again in a month and pass around the information that we've discovered. I would like to see, try to put together, with some help, a list of what the city could do. If you will go find out what they are doing and how much those activities cost, we could maybe put together, if somebody else would volunteer to do a little research about how much.
I would be more than happy to work with Sheila. We're together all the time.
And so. Find out
yeah.
the plantings we want to suggest would cost, you know, or the procedures that we'd like to. If you could handle costing, if you could handle what things you have available and what the rules and regs are for DOT, for the county, and for the city. And very, you know, this may be spread out in two different departments. You said Parks and Rec, and maybe engineering.
We can work on both.
What we are
doing. We got some resources.
Find out how much it costs.
Cost and harass and
we're very loud. The two of us,
Rachel, you find will probably be your best resource.
Yeah, she'll be able to do that one
yeah.
to other people.
Yeah.
But do you think that the community association and the county and cooperative extension are going to have, they're going to cut out a lot of the legwork?
Problem.
I would go to them.
Yeah. They've already done the research.
Mm-hmm. And there's going to be a DOT specific engineer for our county.
That's right.
For District 14.
So yes, and they have
so they're gonna
regulations of what
yeah.
they have to do.
And I would like to put together a resolution or a plan or a suggestion to the next county commissioners and maybe present that before our next or after our next 3 month meeting.
And is it going to be 3 months? Because we started this discussion on we're over our 10 minutes.
Okay. I'll make a motion.
And I just want to just read this real quick. This is awful. The schedule of the meeting shall be kept on file with the Secretary of the Committee and the Clerk of Dennis, the County Court of Commissioners. The committee shall have the authority to change the schedule of regular meetings or to change the date of a particular regularly scheduled meeting without the necessity of the approval of the Board of Commissioners. So we can do this ourselves.
Okay,
all we
have
to do is do it.
That's right.
Let's do it. I just have to let the clerk know because she does
exactly.
have to
have it. Exactly. She's got to have it on file.
I have to have at least 7 business days.
Yeah.
So, it may
okay.
even be more than that, 14.
So maybe we can say, like you suggested,
so every
let's do
5 months.
Every 2 months?
Well, I mean, initially we talked about that as a compromise sort of step.
I think that's a good compromise
okay.
step. If everybody else would agree.
Make it a motion.
I make it a motion. Every 2 months.
I will second that motion. Is anybody taking notes?
And we should all vote on it, I feel, as well.
So every 2 months, starting after the December quarterly meeting or starting in 2015?
That would be
as soon as possible, I would suggest.
For 2 months from now. So 2 months from today?
Yes.
Yeah.
I will vote for November.
And then keep our December meeting?
No.
Okay, so.
Yeah. And then
well,
November, January.
Well, in between. When we have our 2 month meeting, that would give us an option also to discuss how far we've come with what we have in motion and whether, like you said, we can call a meeting for the next month if we wanted to see any progress.
If we have to vote on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, if things are moving quickly enough and we're to a point where, you know, we're this close to maybe making suggestions to the commissioners over a particular issue, call that meeting a month out and get it done.
Well, if you do something with the bees, you'd want to have something definitely by our January meeting. We would want to have something in progress because by March, you're going to need pollination stations for bees. You know, so
yeah.
you'd have to have something done by January regardless. So
say we met in November with our facts that we needed to make a decision or to make them. Suggestion or resolution to the board, made that suggestion during the November to January gap, and then maybe in our January meeting have the commissioners challenge them. You know, what do you want us to be doing? We're going to go off and do these if you don't get on our case. You know, I want to have bike paths. I want to have golf cart paths. You know.
Oh, I could think a lot
about that. My thought on that is, I agree with Clint. I think it would be helpful for us to have some sort of matrix of how things come to us for vetting and vice versa, how things, you know, like, because there may be people in the community that want to have this done, and we just don't know about it because they're not in our circles. And so if there was a way for things the community at large wants us to sit with and vet and research, I think that would be good for us, and also if there's things that we're concerned about that we need to take, that we think they need to be, you know, researched and worked through to take to the county commissioners, I think there's got to be kind of this flow of information for us to really be effective and useful to the community.
And to do it from the community, that's our point. That would be, again, in my mind at least, our point to advertise ourselves, because this is an open meeting and the community is invited to these meetings.
Sure.
They can come to anyone.
And I think something that sits with us is...
You want that avenue of communication open directly from the community. You need to invite the community.
There you go.
Do you
put anything in the activities section of the local newspapers announcing our meeting?
I don't. The clerk may have a different process.
Would you find out?
I mean, would I send out the minutes? I have a sunshine list, so I send to read the paper, and everybody is alerted whenever we do have a meeting because they're on the sunshine list.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So the clerk may have a different process when it comes to announcements for county advisory committees. I'm not part of that process. I'm not sure.
Does that sunshine list show up when you send us an email?
No, I blind carbon copy. Just it's courtesy.
Yeah.
So
could you tell us how many people and entities are?
Yeah, less than 10.
Okay,
less than 10.
So
you have to pay to be on the sunshine list. Organizations have to pay to be on the sunshine list. There's a fee.
Take these releases.
Just because there's a lot of maintaining of records and places that I have to go.
Okay.
But that doesn't mean, you know, if you're involved in organizations, you could ask some of those folks to come. Or,
yeah. Well, could we put a meeting announcement? I know they'll run the community, you know, the little community shorts in the paper.
You can do the little, the little Hendersonville Tribune. Will allow the coffee shop ad thing. Sometimes, if it's beneficial to the community, there's no charge for it. They'll run something in there for you, just as a community news.
Will you take responsibility of getting up a list of local newspapers and
media? Oh, yeah, that's not a problem. Yeah.
Also check Facebook.
The other thing I was thinking about is...
Yeah,
there's regulations against.
Yeah.
Okay. I
social media.
Social media, like.
Ryan, why don't you get with me on this?
Yeah.
I need to see what the county process
that's
is
fine.
For
yeah.
me. Because if there's a fee for putting ads in the paper, I'm just not sure that that's something that's.
No, no, we're not going to.
No,
but
no.
They do have free community announcements.
There
yeah.
are.
But get with me, and I'll get you a list because I know that the clerk has a certain way that she has
sure.
to do it.
Sure.
It's almost five. I don't have my keys to the courthouse, and I'm going
to
get.
I have to go pick up babies.
So our next meeting, then, if we're doing it 2 months from today, is going to be November 6th. Right? And I need to make sure that this room may not be available for us to do bi-monthly. So let me work on it. Now
okay.
And then you let us know. Okay. Great.
Did we
ever thanks.
Say aye about that? Or
I vote in favor of that suggestion.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's reasonable.
Make a motion.
Yes, sir. Sure.
I assume you didn't get any coffee for me.
I will send thank you. I'm going to send the updated roster every day.
part of
right.
Rachel, how's the table